There's great guests, interesting books, and a lot about business and entrepreneurship. My name's Elizabeth Plouffe, and welcome to Across the Desk. Hey, this is Elizabeth Plouffe, and welcome to Across the Desk. Today's a ballsy recap, if you will. And if you've listened to these ones before, you'll know that Ballsy is the Women in Entrepreneurship group that I started a couple of years ago now, almost. And it was started specifically to deal with business issues versus focused on networking and, you know, the touchy-feely sisterhood situation, which, as you can tell by that comment, is not one of my favorite things. So I have amazing friends, and I have developed terrific relationships through operating Ballsy as well, and have met some incredible women. And today we were a small but mighty group, and it's intentional that we keep the group small. Today was only four. Usually we're in the 8 to 10 capacity. But today, thank you very, very much to Marianne D'Alessandro, who operates Time Flies Admin Services, and to Holly Simmons, who is the GoldenLasso.com, and Noreen Jones, which is PowerVac Services in Hamilton. And today we covered such a wide variety. The topic that was on the table was actually spring cleaning for your business. And what I meant by that was, over the summertime, most businesses experience a bit of a dip, especially if you're service-based and it's not seasonal. So if you're a summer-based seasonal business, then woohoo for you! We're already experiencing great weather, so off and running. But if you're, you know, somebody like me who offers communication services and things like that, typically you can take a bit of a hit in the summer because people, understandably, and they should, go on vacation, relax, do whatever. So what can I be doing during that time to get myself ready for, you know, end of August, September, when things start to pick up again? And what can I be creating? What can I be doing? And that was on the table, as well as mentorship. And recently become very interested in mentorship. And a funny story was, today's Wednesday, so on Monday, talked to Hazel van der Werken, who is the owner of Making Change Happen, and she's a terrific friend of mine and a member of Ballsy, and I said, you know, I'm looking for a mentor. I'm starting a technology project, technology business, looking for a mentor. And we both came up with Rima Dougal, who owns and runs the Sitarin Group. And Rima's amazing, and she helps businesses with e-commerce, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not completely sure all of what she offers, but I really trust and value her opinion. And so I said to Hazel, you know what, I'm going to reach out. And so the next day, I had an appointment with the bank to take care of some business stuff, and I had sent Rima an email in the morning to say, hey, would you be interested in this mentor thing? And I hope she's okay with me outing her, but it's important that I share this point. I go into the bank and I spy a book table. And if you've listened to Wise Words, you know that I have a bit of a book issue. But I'll be jiggered if the first book on the table that I really spy is Bill Gates. It's his 1995 autobiography, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's After Time or something like that. And it's all about the development of a technology and software company. It's like, holy crap biscuits. So the universe was, you know, having a little chitty chat. Then I received an email from Marianne D'Alessandro asking for help with one of her mentees, who's a small business owner that needs some, you know, some mentoring around communications and website development. I was like, wowsy doodle. And then ended up having a terrific conversation with Rima, who has agreed to help me in this technology project as a mentor. And just the whole day was amazing around mentorship and reaching out and talking to people. And I'm so grateful for all of it. And it was just an amazing day. So that's kind of why I put it on the table for today at Ballsy. And we had ended up having a conversation that had nothing to do with that, but just covered some incredible topics, which I'm going to share with you. And we also came up with some solutions. So one of the reasons I share these tips and tricks from Ballsy is that our group is specifically designed to not just be talk, 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 no action, no solution. There's definitely time for, you know, cathartic conversation where you're just bitching and moaning and, you know, renting of shirts and tearing of hair and what have you. Typically, that doesn't happen. Typically, and it's happened every time, the group just completely rallies. And today was one of those days where the conversation, you know, somebody needed to discuss particular issues. And I was so impressed. You know, Holly is a John C. Maxwell trained coach, And I think without even knowing it, she put her John C. Maxwell hat on and was just asking the most terrific questions and really guided the conversation to some key points that I'm not sure would have happened otherwise. And Marianne offered some terrific insights that were very helpful around the issue that we were discussing. And I was just blown away again, like just incredibly intelligent, giving women who come together for this group. And it's just awesome. So here were some of the things that we talked about. We talked about actually taking a break from social media and the value of that. Now, for me, that's a little harder because that's what I do for a living. So I need to keep up and what have you. But I do find myself indulging, and especially in stressful situations. And I think I've talked about this before, where you get a serotonin hit. You get that, I think it's serotonin, dopamine, one of the two, the feel-good hormone, whenever you go on social media and you either get a comment or a feedback or some kind of engagement. And the more stressed you are, the more fragile your mental state, sometimes the more you can end up checking in. So I've noticed when I'm stressed, me and Facebook are tight. And, you know, checking in a lot and whatever, because I just need that little hit. That's damaging, though, because it really affects your productivity and flow. So I'm putting a website blocker software on my laptop. And it's an online tool, and it's one that I've had before, and the name escapes me again. I will try and find it quickly. But those kinds of tools are really effective when you've got a lot to get done. And I've got some heavy projects coming up with my clients, and I can't afford to be messing around on, you know, Facebook and Architectural Digest and all of those menial brain breaks that you can take too much of. And I really valued the member who shared that she'd done this. I really valued her honesty in the discovery that she ended up having about what triggered her positive and negative with social media. And why taking that break was good for her psyche, you know. And it was a really valuable insight on the fact that when you're checking in like that, not only could it contribute to the positive hit, but it can also contribute to a negative hit. Because if you see people doing what you know you should be doing, but is just not on your agenda right now, it can really start to be quite damaging. And, you know, especially when you're starting out on your own business, you need as much positive thinking going on as possible. So that was a really valuable conversation. And then we went into the impact, and it was a bit of almost a mom-based conversation in that last week somebody posted on Facebook, irony, about having your kids do chores. And most of us were like, oh, hell yes. You know, like my kids are very chore friendly. And if I were to drop them in the middle of the woods, they could take care of themselves and we're good to go. And one mom piped up and she said, you know, it was my decision to buy a 3-bedroom house. And it's my decision to have this and my decision to have that. Why should my kids be taking care of that for me? Blah, 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 blah. And I got to say, 95% of the people who were involved in this conversation on Facebook blasted this woman nicely, but blasted her saying, do you have any idea what kind of useless tit you're raising by not enforcing chores and teaching them those valuable skills? And what we talked about today was how that translates into the workforce. If at no point during somebody's development does anybody enforce some kind of responsibility and structure and skill building, that really negatively impacts them in the workforce. You know, there's a variety of things that came up, and some of the things, it's the motivation to work. If you're if your organization is in a situation where there's sort of this carrot stick situation and you have to constantly motivate somebody with things that run out, you know, money bonuses or, you know, gift cards or whatever, once they've got that little hit and their little pat on the head and way to go, Johnny, for doing their job that you're already paying them for, what do you do next? So I don't believe in that. I believe that you give people positive reinforcement, and I believe that the motivation should be the company culture and the fact that I'm paying you to do a damn job. And I want to make, you know, for my technology company, I want to make a fun environment where people are able to be creative and work with their personal motivators so that I don't have to do the carrot and stick situation. I mean, absolutely, I want to have celebrations for their personal successes as well as business successes and what have you. But I think if you fall into that carrot stick trap to motivate a workforce who's never been forced to take on responsibility at a younger age, and I do believe there's a direct correlation to that. Don't have a scientific paper, but I don't know that anybody's studied it yet. You know, this a friend of mine referred to it as snowflake parenting, where you sort of drop in periodically and lightly parent and then allow technology to take over your job. We don't know the consequences of that yet, long-term. We don't know, like, this is probably the first generation now entering the workforce whose parents relied largely on electronic babysitters. And I think we're really starting to notice the damage that that type of parenting is doing. So it was an interesting conversation. And what we talked about was how we manage that as employers. So if we get this employee coming in who has had this, I would consider a disabling childhood, one, do you hire them in the first place? How do you screen for that? And if their other qualifications are a clear motivator to hire, do you then cater to the other problems? Or do you engage in a learning situation and, you know, slowly train them to take on these skills that they should have received through chores when they were younger? And that was an interesting conversation and one that I'm going to have to really consider in the next couple of years. And then we also talked about, which we have before, we talked about the actual benefits and the non-discussed benefits that happen on the job and how that can influence the hiring of an employee and the retention of an employee. So if you're in a situation where not only do you pay a decent wage, but you also pay decent benefits and you have flexibility, and if somebody needs to leave because of a family issue, you support that and all of those things, those all contribute to the overall benefit of you as an employer and to the employee. And some of the things that we talked about were benefits, flexibility, training and certifications, you know, having access to a company credit card or company car, and being family focused so that you're understanding when somebody suddenly needs time off, and paying for travel time and lunch time and things like that. And when those aren't clearly laid out, I think after a while, employees can lose track or take for granted what they're receiving from an employer. And when they get what they perceive as a better offer, because these benefits are, you know, closeted, if you will, they lose perspective on what they actually have with you as an employer and the organization overall. And so what we talked about today was making sure that those benefits are clearly reminded to the employees. And Marianne made a really terrific point that she's been in situations where the employer once a year says, hey, you know, look what we've done this year. And we hope you've enjoyed the extensive benefits package and our yearly barbecue and all those kinds of things. And keeping those, not in a cheesy way, but keeping those top of mind for employees can help keep perspective when, you know, there's a knock at the door and somebody's potentially courting a really important employee in your organization. And that brought us into a couple of other topics, such as, like, what do you do when somebody leaves unexpectedly? And you know they're leaving for what is going to be a bad opportunity for them. Nothing you can do about that. But you know within a very short period of time, the reality of their choice is going to bite them in the ass. What do you do when they ask to come back, or if they ask to come back? And especially if they've, you know, this isn't the first time they've done this. There are industries where there is a dearth of skills and you're hard-pressed to hire talent for your organization. And it might be very tempting to be in a situation where somebody leaves for greener pastures in a short period of time. Turns out the pasture is full of cow shit and they decide to approach you to come back. I would really hesitate in that situation because that person did not demonstrate loyalty. They did not demonstrate what I would consider a decent worth ethic, especially if they left you in a lurch. And if they're willing to leave you once or maybe twice for greener pastures or perceptive greener pastures, why the hell would you put yourself through that? They put you in a lurch. You've assigned them to projects. They up and go. You're now scrambling to find somebody to fill their shoes. They decide to walk and then they want to come back. I'm not a very forgiving person on a good day, but that kind of behavior says to me no. Even if there is a problem with supply and demand of employees within your industry, you're just setting yourself up for more heartbreak and failure and disruption within your team and your organization and with your clients. So I don't know. I'm kind of a hard no on that. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that if you've been in that situation. And that kind of led into a conversation about the impact of decisions of taking on projects on company culture. And if you take on a project for your organization that's way outside your normal comfort zone, and you are taking on a project that entails some additional sacrifice on the behalf of employees, now you're paying them for it. You know, you want to be fair. But if it is now additional travel or additional hours or what have you, there can be an unexpected negative downside to that. And if employees don't have a buy-in to your organization, their patience can run thin pretty quickly when it comes to having taken on a project way outside. It's either outside your geographical jurisdiction for normal, or it's a bit outside your skill set, or what have you. So I think it's really important to evaluate when you're bidding on a project overall, what's this going to do for my business, and what's it going to do to my employees, and how do I either mitigate the impact on them so that, you know, the company culture isn't destroyed for the sake of a good contract, because the long-term effects of that, you know, it may fully succeed and rah-rah, and that can open up, you know, whole new vistas for you. But I think it's really important to maintain an eye on that and see if you're getting any blowback from the employees about, I don't know, if it's travel, if it's whatever. And talk to them about that and be very open and honest about managing it. And okay, guys, what's your feedback and how's it going and what do we need to do? I'm not there yet. I haven't had to deal with it yet. The person in our group who has is doing an excellent job, I think, of managing it. It's her first time having a situation like this. And definitely lessons learned that she's going to move forward with. And one of the last things that came up was in business. I've had my business now for 2 years, and I'm relatively low key, right? So I keep my client load at a certain level that I know I can handle, and I keep other projects, my volunteer projects, within a certain level that I know I can handle. I'm pausing because my husband often looks at me like I'm a lunatic when I take something else on. But what happens when the boogeyman pops out of the bushes and you just have a whole bunch of stuff go wrong all at the same time? And that can happen to anybody. I mean, I had a 6-month stretch where every piece of technology that I had, and I'm very technology dependent, just went for a complete shit. And, you know, my laptop hard drive went, and then I ordered a computer, a desktop computer as a backup, and it went funky chicken, and my phone was doing weird shit. And pardon my language. And just every piece of it was like I had a gremlin in my house that was going, screw you, lady, I'm going to mess with everything. I had a backup hard drive that failed, just a whack of stuff. So what do you do when the boogeyman pokes his head out and starts messing with your stuff? And there was some really interesting feedback today on how people manage that. And one of which is, or what that causes, sorry, we'll talk about that first, is how do you move forward when the direction is unclear? When you have these boogeyman moments happening faster than you can manage them, it can be very paralyzing. And you end up in a situation where you just might completely pull back and just stop pursuing new projects and stop everything so that you can catch your breath, which is completely reasonable. Within a certain amount of time, obviously. There may be some business people listening to this who are aghast, but you do need to pause. You're a human being. Capacity is what capacity is, and you can only take so much. And if the boogeyman's throwing you, you know, broken technology and broken trucks and staff leaving and all this other stuff, eventually either you take a step back and pause or your head's going to explode. And so we talked about that, managing the stress. How do you bid on projects when you're not quite sure what's going on? And we talked about, you know, things like keeping in mind tomorrow's another day. Keeping in mind if you have, you know, faith in God, Buddha, universe, whatever you've got, you know, what does that do for you? And one of the last things we talked about is what relaxes you. And the difference between what relaxes you and what feeds the passion about your business. So if you are somebody who enjoys problem solving and strategy and whatever, and you find that what you think relaxes you also involves those muscles, what you can be inadvertently doing is contributing to a little bit of burnout, because your brain never gets a break from strategizing, from problem solving. And even though it's something that you enjoy and the perception is that you're relaxing, you could, in fact, be better off doing something completely out of the normal for you. Go for a walk, go for a hike. I don't know. I can't even paint a picture, whatever. Something that uses different muscles. so that, again, if you are very strategy focused, problem solving focused, your brain is allowed to rest. So that when you come back to the problems at hand and the boogeyman are starting to go back in the bushes and everything's kosher, you know, you're able to focus and function and deliver. And I think we forget that as entrepreneurs. We forget what we need to manage the burnout. We forget what we need to manage the boogeyman or women, the boogie people. And I think it's out of all of these things, because we know all of this is going to happen. We know employees are going to leave. We know that we're going to have impact on our company culture through projects. We know that we're going to have to go through hiring and firing. We know that unexpected, you know, technology things are going to creep up. How are you managing that? How are you managing the stress of that? Because I got to tell you, there have been times my husband has looked at me like I'm completely crazy. Could well be. So what do I do for that? I read. I read a lot for that. I find volunteering very stress relieving. And I, you know what? I really struggle to say that. What do I do to relax? I don't know. I watch Father Brown and Marvel movies. I know I need more things to relax. So what you might be hearing soon, I'm going to be going and getting a ukulele. And I'm going to learn how to play the ukulele. And I'm going to exercise those music muscles that I used to years ago when I played in a flute trio. And give my brain a break. Because the books I tend to read tend to be about business and business development, which is not a break for your brain. So maybe, I don't know, you might hear a concert, ukulele concert coming up. Who knows? Could be. So I'd love to hear if you've been managing the boogie people. What do you do to do that? How do you relax? Have you ever noticed a pattern in what you use to relax is the same thing that is the passion that drives your business? And if you recognize that, what are you going to do to change it? What are you going to do to honestly give your brain a break? And that's it for today. Thank you again to my ballsy women that come out every month and show incredible amounts of grace and intelligence and just so thankful. And, you know, not in a mushy way, but in a holy shit, I'm lucky way. These ladies are just phenomenal. And if you look up Ballsy Women in Business, you know, my website should come up, but I've put up a new directory page that profiles some of the ladies who are the most consistent in coming out, and you'd be incredibly lucky to work with them. They are just phenomenal women. Aren't we all? Anyway, I hope you're having a fantastic day, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Across the Desk. You can follow me on Twitter at MCBComms. You can check me out on Instagram at MCB Communications. And you can also visit me on mcbcommunications.ca to see what other madness I'm up to.